Good afternoon. Today is Friday, August 23rd, 234th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon is the Humboldt Bay Recreation Conservation. Wait.
Humboldt Bay Harbor Recreation. Harbor.
I knew there was another thing in that mix. Yeah, harbor. That's right, the harbor part. Board member Mike Wilson. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Glad to be here.
Good, good. Got a bunch of different things we're going to kind of bounce around a little bit this afternoon. Certainly the concept of developing infrastructure, terminals, that kind of stuff, boat attracting things,
sure.
I guess for the simplest way, simplest minds. We'll spend a little bit of time talking about some of those things that are going on, as well as some of the other different challenges that are out there, like the infrastructure of dredging.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, who knows? Jack Kreider was on last month. They said something about cruise boats. He thinks that the cruise industry is a viable option. So we'll talk a bit about that and some of the other dreams we have for the future of Humboldt Bay. Ooh, can you tell it's a Friday? Yeah, I can. We'll be back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 313. We're back to Talk Shop this very afternoon with Mike Wilson. But before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from Wilt Chamberlain.
Okay.
All right. Quote, nobody roots for Goliath.
That's not totally true.
Yeah, well, okay.
There's been studies about 10% of the people do, actually.
Oh, really? Root for the favorite?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They don't cheer too loud. How's that? Oh, boy. Mm-hmm. So, Mike, when you perceive and you envision what Humboldt Bay is going to look like plus 25 years.
25.
So it's out far enough, whatever change, you know, we might actually have a general plan by then. Mm-hmm. That's been adopted.
Well, more than that, when you get the general plan done, then you got to do the local coastal plan after that.
Et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, everything falls into place at that point. What do you see on Humboldt Bay? Is it recognizable? Is it different? Is it, what is it?
Well, I don't, 25 years is a bit tough for me. I prefer to work on 10-year timelines in terms of what we're working on today. But I would like to see us get to really a sustainable place in terms of our economy and movement of goods in and out of Humboldt Bay. It would be great if we could have a public docking facility that has the ability of multiple entrepreneurs to be able to take advantage of that, just like many other ports up and down the coast. It's a piece of infrastructure we could really use. Currently, there's a lot of effort into looking at Humboldt Bay as being a place for renewable energy research, both for ocean-based science in terms of wind and wave, but also biomass and even, and it seems a bit magic to me, an osmotic power plant is something that people are trying to look at. And we can talk about that in a little bit. And I think that there's also more opportunity for boat building, boat repair, those sorts of things on Humboldt Bay, and certainly visitor services, really a wide variety of economic opportunity. I think that diversity is going to be what helps us survive and sustain in the future.
I'm not hearing a significant employment base in any one.
Yeah.
You know, like we had the pulp mill.
Mm-hmm.
We had, you know, the various versions of the mills on the bay historically.
Yep.
The big boat building facility in the 40s. You know.
Okay.
I'm not seeing or sensing that the whaling station, South Bay.
I don't know how many people were employed at the whaling station, but okay.
I've seen pictures.
Okay.
It looked like a lot of people.
All right. I made some assumptions.
You got
that,
the big boat, you know, the big whale in the center of them all too. So
right there,
it could have been staged as well.
Mm-hmm.
So with more of the smaller, does the ratio of the investment of infrastructure to return on the investment, is it easier to hit? Or is it more challenging to hit when you've got a bunch of smallers?
Well, that's a very interesting question. It depends on what it is. And I, for an example, when we're looking at what the district's looking to do with pre-permitting more oyster farms in Humboldt Bay, the investment, at least from the government perspective, has to do with the studies and setting up the leases. That's in the, well, you know, low-end $200,000, high-end $500,000 investment, which seems like a lot, but we're in the expectation is 50 jobs, more or less, out of that, which is a very, really very good ratio when you consider the jobs to investment relative to something that requires a lot more, such as, you know, roads and rails and those sorts of things. And so it really depends. If you look at a place like, say, the business park models that Arcata has invested in, and that was 20 years ago, and now they're coming to fruition now, you see a lot of job growth in those areas and a lot of opportunity. And so you're aggregating these larger spaces for a lot of smaller things. And that has been a great model for the U.S., certainly, and that's definitely a forward-looking model in terms of, especially in rural areas, as in terms of growth. And that's why Humboldt County actually has a lot of success it does relative to other rural places, is because of that model.
When you look at the Redwood Marine Terminal,
mm-hmm.
or the Redwood Dock, I guess, is mm-hmm. kind of an easier one, the space that's there on the land,
mm-hmm.
the space that's there that's on the dock, the infrastructure that would be necessary for all of that, the permitting that you were alluding to, does that make the investment for the structural elements easier? Do they run in tandem, or is that kind of like apples and pears, two completely unique sets?
Well, I mean, it's not dissimilar. It is a bit of a larger scale, but even if you look at port development in some of the other ports now that are looking to do more of their infrastructure, very few are doing very big projects, at least in the smaller port areas. They're doing areas, again, they're doing areas where they develop zones for multiple businesses to come in. And so the it's not that government's doing the job of creating jobs. They're creating the infrastructure and the space that then does that. They are aggregating, I guess, or bringing together the risk and also the benefit. And so that's why you see the success really happening in that model at ports up and down the coast. It very rarely happens purely on the private side, because the private's doing it themselves. It's just the timelines are not something that they're interested in. The risk of investment is not something that they're quite as easy, you know.
Well, even the legality of it.
The legality of it, and actually access to certain funding streams as well.
KINS News and Information Time, it's 3:19.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. Mark the dates August 14th through the 25th for the 117th annual Humboldt County Fair in Ferndale. Beginning opening day, there'll be 8 days of fast horse racing. Competing beef and dairy cattle, goats, poultry, sheep, and swine will be on display and judged. The flower pavilion will be filled with beautiful plants grown by county gardeners. The Art Pavilion will have many delights for the eye, and enjoy the judged exhibits of locally made items, from baked goods to hand-spun yarn, with much in between, such as decorated potatoes, scarecrows, quilts, rugs, and home brews. There'll be plenty to eat and drink, so you can treat yourself to corn dogs and cotton candy. The Commercial Exhibits Building will feature fascinating products, and of course there's the Ferris Wheel and other rides the kids will want to try. For hours and information, call 786-9511. That's 786-9511. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people, places, and things that makes us a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Times, 3:24. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mike Wilson. Mike, looking at the dock, looking at some of these development zones, I guess might be the easiest way for a lot of us to kind of wrap our head around it.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have to be identified, who's going in the zone, or are you thinking, is your vision getting all the zoning permits taken care of. And then whatever happens in those areas happens in those areas, and the Harbor District is kind of back and just letting whatever happens happen.
Well, the hard part about that is using the pre-permitting model that we're talking about for, you know, aquaculture in the bay, you could use, that's the same thing as a business park model on terrestrial land, and that business park model has worked pretty well for ports too. And so what is done is, you're right, you're pre-permitting the types of businesses that would go into there, or the types of industry or that are marine dependent, and then they're able to do that. What we have right now on the peninsula is sort of a hodgepodge of ownerships, makes it a bit more difficult, which is why the district has sought to acquire more of that property so that we can engage in doing more of that type of development, and which is why we just acquired the pulp mill site and its assets.
Is the hodgepodge nature of it, does that make it more challenging, or does it make it more vibrant or more potential for more businesses?
It's more challenging.
Okay. Because of the different uses?
Yeah, because it's hard to negotiate these sort of larger development projects when you don't have control, really. And so when you have these multiple landowners, everyone has sort of their own interests, and it just adds time and complication. It's not impossible, but you're sort of backwards engineering planned use development, where typically you would have a big piece of property subdivided out in terms of how, you know, how best to lay it out for these different businesses and then invite the businesses. Unfortunately, well, not just the way it is, that they're all already privately owned in different ways, and so we have to work with them and all their vested interests to try and move everybody forward, try and float all the boats at the same time. It's a little more complicated, but not impossible.
When you mentioned that, I flashed to King Salmon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that area part of the responsibility of the Harbor District?
Are you talking King Salmon or Fields Landing?
King Salmon. Because you got the canals there, you got the flooding that's there. It's right there on the water.
Right.
Is that under the jurisdiction
No.
at all, the waterways, or is that all kind of county?
We have permitting jurisdiction up to high tide in that area, and
so the canals are under your
They're under a permitting jurisdiction, and there's an issue there right now where PG&E, as part of its decommissioning, wants to. They're actually responsible for those canals, because that canal was actually the feed for the cooling water. And so there's negotiations now as to how that potential transfer might occur. But we're sort of standoffish at the moment and with regards to that. We do manage the beach area, and that was created and managed by the district.
So it's more of a interested bystander?
Yeah, well, there's a little bit more than that. We're being asked to potentially, you know, actually take management over
Of the canals?
Of the canals, but, you know, we're reticent with regards to that, because there's a lot of responsibility with that, and we want to make sure that there's a revenue stream that maintains that.
That's what I was wondering, because right now my understanding was that each of the homeowners along the canals have the responsibility of whatever their percentages of the waterfront, and if everybody decides, or if it's not unanimous to do the dredging doesn't get done.
Yeah.
And then you get the backups because of the storm stuff. And that's what I was getting to.
Yeah, they don't.
Safety during wintertime.
I don't even know if they even have the mechanism, the functional organization in that way. It's a ways off.
Picnic barbecue lunches, yeah, it's a little.
Not my district.
Oh, I see. You got to do that number,
you can talk to Aaron Newman about it.
Oh, fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
The different areas that you guys do have the jurisdiction on, certainly the marina is one of those areas.
Yeah.
Dredging is one of those areas.
Yeah.
Those are probably the two most visible, other than the dock.
Mm-hmm.
Infrastructure things that we see as
the
casual member of the community.
Mm-hmm.
How much attention do those visible elements take of your time?
Oh, quite a bit of our staff time, for sure, managing that, and quite a bit of our budget. And it was an issue with you know, with regards to our budget this year, in terms of we raised rates at the marina, and we haven't been really raising rates much over the last 30 years, and so we were trying to get, you know, catch up with that. Where we created a fund for dredging and also another fund for dock maintenance as well in there, and it's an issue for us. As you know, the dredging 7 or 8 years ago was a big deal. It's probably coming up in another 4 years, and so we've been working hard to figure out what we're going to do, because we've been told by the agencies we can't do it in the same way we did before, and quite frankly, we don't have the budget to do it in the same way we did before. And so one of the options we're looking at that other ports have looked at is getting our own dredge. Yeah.
KINS News and Information, it's 3:30.
Choosing new furniture for your home can be a challenge. Will the colors match? Will the fabrics go well? Will it be comfortable? And will it last? Solve these questions with a visit to Vern's Furniture. Vern's Furniture Consultants have the knowledge to put the right room together for you, whether it's the living room, bedroom, dining room, or laundry room. Vern's has what you're looking for. Free delivery and so much more. Vern's Furniture in downtown Eureka.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mike Wilson from the Humboldt Bay Harbor Recreation and Conservation District.
Good, you got it right this time.
Yeah, I even kind of put a little emphasis on it there, just for everybody's sake. Mike, some of the properties are the sphere of influence, if you will, that the Harbor District has. Hmm. How far do you go? I mean, we got a number of sloughs around Humboldt Bay.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a major one running out here by our plant. How far does the Harbor District go, and to whose jurisdiction then does the sloughs and the creeks, the feeders into the bay, other than the ocean, of course, who has those jurisdictions and those responsibilities, either to dredge, like you were referencing,
right,
or to just maintain and keep them safe?
Well, there's a difference between jurisdiction in terms of, you know, regulatory jurisdiction and actually doing something. And so the main channels are, the district has jurisdiction up to mean high water all around the bay and even up into the sloughs. The Army Corps has dredging responsibility for the main channels, and we have dredging responsibility just for the parts that are in front of our docks and in our marina. City of Eureka has responsibility for its marina and then its waterfront, and that's not privately owned. That doesn't have private ownership. So, I mean, that's kind of where it's at. You know, then there's just a host of other agencies that all have their things that they're interested in, whether it has to do with wildlife or maintenance of thoroughfares or whatever they may be.
Can anybody do anything autonomously?
What do you mean by autonomously?
Without getting sign-offs from other agencies, other entities, other regulators?
Well, there are things that are permit-exempt, certainly.
Such as?
Well, maintenance activities and things like that.
Oh, so when you guys dredge, you don't need to have a permit?
Well, no, those have permits associated, but they're long-term permits. So they're like 10-year permits.
So you're not having to take one out.
Not every time.
To clean up around the docks.
Right, exactly. So what I mean by maintenance is if you're maintaining certain facilities and maintaining them to be the same, it's when you're starting to grow things or remove things that permits then tend to be required. But, you know, there's many more agencies than us that have a say in that sort of thing.
Historically, the North Bay was an economic component to the harbor.
Mm-hmm. Still is.
I suppose you could argue a little bit with the oysters, but I was thinking the North Bay out by where the trains used to go.
That's only millions of dollars.
Do most bays that are similar
mm-hmm.
to Humboldt have such large portions of the bay not being utilized for commerce? You know, the South Bay is a set aside, the North Bay is a set aside.
Well, I mean, both of those are mudflat areas. And so bays that have large mudflats typically are not used for the types of commercial activity you're talking about. But Tomales Bay, Humboldt Bay have significant aquaculture industries that are occurring there, and they are job generators, and they do. And as a matter of fact, I mean, that's one of the reasons why we're doing the pre-permitting, is because what we found when we did our economic development meetings some 4 years ago, it was the one industry that was space limited. It was the one group of people that said, every square foot that you can permit, we will fill up and do. Where we can't...
It's not a long line around here.
Right, right. Well, we can't, you know, and even with the purchase of the pulp mill, we have folks, that are very interested in doing terrestrial, meaning on land, aquaculture. If we can get the permitting for the intake and the discharge,
more than the guys that are working with Arklay.
Oh yeah, but same thing.
Additionals,
yeah. I mean, they're just a harbinger. I mean, they're you know, that's a Hog Island. It's a $1.5 million facility. It's going to employ, I think, 10 people pretty much right off the bat, 8 or 10, which doesn't seem like a lot, but it takes up a very small space, and there will be more of those. And like I said, that industry, you know, is poised for growth at every level, because in the United States, we import 90% of our seafood, and the types of oysters and the product that's being produced in Humboldt Bay is of such high quality, it's well sought after.
Could we do the same thing with Dungeness crab?
I don't know. Domesticated in some way? Or
Farm it?
I don't
know. I mean, it's kind of the equivalent of this, I guess, sort of, kind of. I don't know.
Well,
it's not like what Lazio was talking about with the salmon farming. But it's kind of in that same realm.
I mean, as a tangent to that, I mean, that's why one of the reasons I've been a big advocate for estuarine restoration on Humboldt Bay, because that's the nursery for those crab species. So if we can...
Estuarine,
the estuaries. So the estuaries is where the salt and freshwater mix. And
the sloughs.
The sloughs, which have been all diked, and they've been made very small. They're at about 10% of what they used to be in terms of like that habitat space. And so you create more of that habitat, and what we see when people seine it, which is basically fine net, is that you're finding those areas are big nurseries for the groundfish, which is also important to us, but also the Dungeness crab as well. And so it's, you know, that's the economic value to some of the ecological restoration that we see on Humboldt Bay, is it creates the nurseries for those things that we have high value for.
How do crabs get out of the bay if this is where they hang out? They just ride the tide?
Just ride it right out, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if there's a way we put a... Yeah. Screen out there somewhere.
Right.
Be a lot easier for everybody and a whole lot less danger.
Yeah, and that's one of the business interests in the again, back to the pulp mill site, is that site has a mile and a half outfall, it's 50 inches. It has 250,000 square feet of warehouse and office space on site. You know, it has all the hookups for electricity and gas.
And water.
And water, huge amounts of water available to it. And so there's a lot of interest in what we can do with that facility, both from the aquaculture interests, but also from the renewable energy interests as well. And so there, because of that interface that... they're looking for places along the West Coast for doing wave and wind energy research, and that outfall line.
Now they couldn't do that there, could they?
Oh, yeah.
With the Coastal Commission and all those battles and the funny determinations they've been making lately about the spit, there's still space for that kind of project?
Well, that kind of project would basically fill in space that's already on site. So you already have the warehousing and all the equipment to be used offshore would be just basically at experimental levels. But there needs to be a place that it can be done and looked at. And so that's one of the things that they're looking at that site. Another is for biomass, which happens to be the, you know, conversion of our wood waste to energy. And we have that out there with DG Power, but also doing pellet conversion for export, which is a value added, and some of those other things.
It makes the docks come into play too.
Oh, absolutely. Having a dock in that site is important. Ocean research is also something that people have been talking a lot about, having facilities there.
More than just the Coral Sea.
Well, yeah, more than just the Coral Sea, but it's actually sort of expanding off of the Coral Sea and what can be done with regards to that.
Does UC look at any of that stuff? Because I know in Oregon, it's Oregon State, and they're all over the place doing all kinds of stuff.
Yep.
Does the UC system have any push? I know we've got the corporate.
We have the ag extension.
The co-op extensions.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly when we have those types of facilities, you're a lot more attractive. So, wanting to sort of be a sort of Scripps of the North would be helpful too. But that's all in it's all the pieces. It's not any one of them is what you're looking for. It's putting them all together in a single space is what we're trying to do.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:43. We'll be back with more from Mike Wilson.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:47. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mike Wilson. Mike, the concept of renovating or repurposing, I guess, is probably the right term.
Right.
Of the pulp mill site. Mm-hmm. The tarmac is down. A lot of the basics, the heavy lifting is done.
Mm-hmm.
The investment is done. Now, there may be some maintenance issues.
Oh, there's a big one.
But, yeah, what is the big ogre that's out there right now?
The big ogre that's out there is 4 million gallons of what's called mixed liquors, which is basically it's the tannins and lignins from pulping. And at a very basic, meaning a very low pH, so it's caustic, and it needs to be removed. And that is basically why we receive the property for...
Why the opportunity presented
itself, right.
Yes.
So for quote-unquote free, and that's the exchange. But the folks that had it before, they didn't have the capacity. There was... And it was transferred that way by Evergreen Pulp, who left town just basically with the doors hitting them on the way out. And so, we as a community, we're really left with this issue. And we're seeing it more and more as a threat to the bay because they're stored
seepage potential, yeah.
Well, really, catastrophic failure is what we're most concerned about.
So where does this stuff go? Is it like some of the others, it goes to a landfill site in the middle of the country? Is there a chemical process that neutralizes it?
There's folks have looked into that, but probably the simplest removal, the simplest solution is removal to another pulp mill so it will take it and consume it. And
so this is still a viable product for an ongoing...
Well, most pulp mills burn it. And so that's really, and they even get a tax credit at 50 cents a gallon to burn these liquors. And so the thought at the moment really is to try and set up facilitate a way to move those materials there so that we can all breathe a sigh of relief that it's not, an imminent threat to the bay and our,
So where's the
ecology.
Closest?
I think Longview might be.
Is it Longview?
Yeah. And so there's,
pretty good haul.
Two ways to get there, trucking it and or barging it, and there's the complication of how much they can take at any one time into their system. So these are the things we're really working hard to figure out, and amongst all the other things
we're
working
hard on. That gives
you
guys something to do.
We got plenty to do. I know you've had Jack on here, and I'm sure he lists them all out as well.
Oh, yeah, he's got his laundry list, too. It's kind of sort of similar. Thanks for coming by, Mike.
Well, it was great to be here, and anytime.
You betcha. Mm-hmm. We've been Talking Shop this afternoon with Mike Wilson. Join us Monday afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hopefully, I'll see you tomorrow morning.